Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, and I'm David Todd from TheHammerSpeaks.com. You can follow Dave on Twitter at SteelersDepot, and you can follow me at HammerSpeaks. Dave's got the most comprehensive Steelers site you're going to find on the internet, and I know you know that by now. Dave, I'm in New York cleaning up a long holiday weekend. We've got the Pirates opening things up on Thursday. We've got Mike Milbury being a jackass. And the Penguins probably starting their playoffs Tuesday or Wednesday next week. So it looks like they're going to get the Flyers. And, of course, we've got the Steelers 3 weeks away, 3 weeks and a couple days away from the NFL draft. And that's where we're going to spend most of our time the next couple weeks. What's going on with you?
Well, the big news, of course, I guess today, if you call it that, was Nike unveiled their 2012 jersey designs. And you know, we already had kind of an inkling from a few people that there was not going to be any major changes to the Steelers jersey. That indeed was the case. I mean, these things are nice to look at. They're made out of some very neat material, water repellent type stuff. The gloves are always fun to look at. But, you know, it is what it is. It's basically a Steelers jersey with a swoosh on it instead of the Reebok logo. And I've got some of those pictures up on SteelersDepot.com. Of course, after I made that post, the crush of traffic, which is always a good thing to have, leveled, melted down my server almost, but everything's back to normal there. But that's about the biggest thing of interest today in Steeler Nation. Outside of some pre-draft visits we'll get to. Did you get a chance to look at the pictures of the uniforms?
I did. I've seen them. I saw some of the up-close kind of looks. It looks like, obviously, everything's lighter. Everything's, quicker drying, and, everything's more fabulous, basically. But I didn't see anything other than, obviously, the Nike swoosh and the logo on the front shoulder that looked different.
And I think they're going to be that they introduced that patch that you can read about on Steelers.com for the 80th season commemorative type patch. I think that'll probably be on that as well. These things, using these new technology and all like that. Ben Roethlisberger talked to the media today, supposedly said these things feel lighter, yada, yada. I don't know how to sell these things. I would be fired from Nike pretty quick. For not promoting these things correct. But, they still have those rounded numbers. I know a lot of people in Steeler Nation would like the Steelers to go back to more of those block-type letters from the 70s. But other than the swoosh and the new material and fabric, really no noticeable changes. I think the Seahawks probably had the most noticeable kind of changes there. But, I mean, let's face it, at the end of the day, we don't have an Oregon Duck situation here, I don't think.
Yeah, right, exactly. The Steelers are a tradition-rich organization, and I don't think anybody's surprised with generally the fact that they're going to go with what they've had, and that's the way it's going to be. And I think the NFL, as much as that, you like to change things because you can sell more gear, and that's obviously a big deal. Merchandise is a big deal for the NFL. Where we're going to see that for the Steelers is they're going to come out with a new throwback this year. So that'll be the one thing that we see that's different.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know if people, there's been mention of an alternate jersey. I don't know if people, I don't know for sure if they're meaning that to be the throwback jersey, which supposedly we don't have confirmation. It's supposed to be that Batman-looking kind of jersey with a cowl kind of, draped over the front of it there. But we don't have any confirmation on either of those, and I don't know if they're meaning that the alternate jersey will be the throwback. I can't see them having three jerseys. I know trying to fit in just the throwback for a couple games is probably tough enough in a 16-game season.
Yeah. Dave, I think the other interesting thing I saw today, I haven't seen it confirmed by somebody else, but I'll take it as fact, is that we're going to see the schedule tomorrow. Sounds like we'll at least have all the national games. It sounded like to me that maybe we'll get the whole thing, but maybe we'll get only all the national games, the Sunday and Monday night games, etc. But certainly we're going to have some info there. And it'll be interesting to see. We've, you know, a lot of talk about the Steelers opening in Denver on Sunday night against Peyton Manning and the Broncos. Clearly, rekindling how the season ended this past year. And, of course, Ryan Clark would most likely not be in the lineup because of his issues of playing in Denver on that game. And then we've got games that will be features. I mean, look, the Steelers are a big draw, and they've got big games. They've got both New York teams on the schedule this year. Wouldn't be at all surprised to see them have a Monday night game with the Giants. I know there's been some talk about that. Of course, the Jet game and some other big ones. So there were a little less Monday night activity for the Steelers this past year. Might see that change the other way and see them, I expect to see them at least two times, maybe three times on Monday night this year.
I'm not sure about, when you talk about that Sunday night game as a possibility opening up against Denver, you throw in there probably the game against the Giants, as you mentioned, as a possibility of either a Sunday night or a Monday night game. Outside of that, maybe a game against the Ravens on a Monday night football. But, I mean, can you see more than maybe three of those primetime type games?
Well, of course they do get the NFC East, and with the NFC East, you get three teams, four teams, all of which can be in primetime at any time. So Steelers, Eagles, Steelers, Cowboys, Steelers, Giants, Steelers, Redskins. I mean, I was down the last time the Steelers played in Washington. That was a Monday night game. So all of those games have, obviously they won't all be that, but they all have the potential to be that.
Yeah, most definitely. They're always a big ratings draw, and the networks know this as well. So I haven't heard that rumor about them tomorrow, but, of course, that doesn't mean anything. Usually I think it comes a little bit later in April, but, I'll have to research that after the show today.
All right, good stuff. Let's go on to the Steeler news. It's in terms of the organization and the players themselves. Free agency has really quieted down, as we've talked about at length. These are now salary cap issues. Everybody's trying to figure things out. Again, we've talked about it 100 times. Mike Wallace situation, the drop-dead date is April 20th. We're now April 3rd, so we're 17 days away from having that clarified. But because the Steelers, of course, want to keep that cap space available, if somebody were to come in here at the last second and have the option of matching, they haven't made any other moves. But with not making other moves, we do see a little bit of news. And the two Steelers who have made the news a little bit are Jericho Cotchery and Byron Leftwich. And you put a post up on Leftwich. Cotchery apparently has a visit scheduled with the St. Louis Rams. And you wrote about Leftwich in Indianapolis. What's the latest on that situation?
Yeah, I kind of threw this out on a podcast a couple of weeks ago. A little rumor been floating around. And Mark Cabali kind of enlightened us more on that today, that sources kind of informed him that Bruce Arians, of course, is the offensive coordinator over there now with Indianapolis. And they will, of course, and let me preface this by saying all this stuff about Robert, RG3 and him supposedly turning down a private visit to the Colts and all like that. There is no doubt in my mind the Colts are drafting Andrew Luck. Anything outside of that, it just is stupid to even talk about unless Luck cuts off one of his hands between now and draft day. But that being said, it kind of makes sense. Now, the Colts did trade for Drew Stanton after the Tim Tebow deal and all like that, but Stanton is probably a number three quarterback at best. I could definitely see Leftwich being brought in there to handle the first few weeks of the season there to teach Andrew Luck the offense initially. That way they don't throw Luck to the wolves initially. Of course, it will not take long before Luck hits the field. It's just a matter of, we talking week 4, week 8, week 12, something along those lines. But, of course, if Leftwich goes in there and wins, it's kind of hard to sit down a guy that's winning. But Leftwich understands the Bruce Arians offense. He would at least get playing time there initially, something he would not get in Pittsburgh, unless Roethlisberger was to do something stupid or have some sort of season-ending injury that way. Kevin Colbert, all this time, has kind of left the door open of Leftwich returning. That, of course, would not be on anything more, in my opinion, than a qualifying one-year contract where they would get the salary cap discount to go along with it. There's also talk about them possibly bringing back Charlie Batch, in addition. So, yeah, I don't know how much to read into this. I haven't read that Leftwich has actually made a visit there yet. So until then, we'll just have to, put it on the back burner as something to watch as the pot boils going forward. Jericho Cotchery, as you mentioned, I wrote about that last week when the news come up that he was supposed to make a free agent visit to the St. Louis Rams either today or tomorrow is what they're pointing at. The in there, of course, is Brian Schottenheimer, the Rams' new offensive coordinator, of course, was the offensive coordinator for the Jets when Cotchery was there. I can't see the Rams throwing big money at him. He would definitely be a number three or number four receiver. Cotchery's not going to play special teams for you. So it could come down to the age-old thing of money. So we'll have to keep our eye on that and see how that goes going forward the rest of this week. I would expect him to make a decision on that pretty quick if indeed an offer's on the table.
I'm sure the Steelers are hoping they get to to April 20th and Cotchery hasn't done anything, because I think that money, as soon as the Wallace stuff is off the table, I think the first two guys to go sign are Leftwich and Cotchery. And let's be clear about one thing about Byron Leftwich. If he were to leave, the Steelers have a gaping hole at backup quarterback. We are well into the free agent period, and the guys who are left on the board are the Dennis Dixons of the world. They're not a lot of serviceable guys out there where I'd be looking at him and say, that's fine to have a guy who is there for the season to be the backup, and you can groom a third guy to be a backup for a couple of years. But it would create a sense of urgency that I don't have any sense of it now, but it would create a sense of urgency to fill that roster spot. So again, hopefully we get to April 20th. And the Steelers can do a couple things because they'll have more flexibility. And I would expect those two guys to be the first two guys targeted.
You mean you wouldn't bring in Tyler Palco?
I'm not dying for Tyler Palco.
I'm with you. I think Byron's been hurt, and he gets a bad rap. People are making judgments on him. Hey, look, going back 2 years now, he's only played in one game, and it was the Week 17 game against the Cleveland Browns. And I think he took about 18 snaps in that game. He's looked good in some preseason action that he's had. Of course, it's hard to draw conclusions from that. But I think he's a quarterback that can manage a game. Now, of course, if the Steelers were to lose Ben Roethlisberger for an extended period of time, it's not looking good, period. But I think Leftwich is a guy that can hold the fort down for a couple weeks if Roethlisberger was to have a short-term injury as far as that goes. So I'm with you. I mean, I know a lot of Steeler Nation might be against it, but I hope they get Leftwich back.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, I do too. I hope they get him. Clearly, Charlie Batch would then become a priority if Leftwich were to sign away. I think it would kind of guarantee that he were back in the fold. As it is, if Leftwich comes back, I'm sure nothing wrong with having Charlie Batch, but you feel somewhat indifferent because, again, we're talking about the third-string quarterback. They'll have arms in camp, and we'll see where that goes, whether there's a guy, Smith from Ohio State, the Heisman winner, who is with the Ravens, will be in camp, and there'll be a few other guys as well. Jared Johnson, the kid from Texas A&M.
Speaking of Johnson real quick, suppose there's been a lot of buzz of him, this offseason. Of course, most of it's stemming from, I think, his quarterback coach down there that he works with. I've read some interesting pieces that this kid's accuracy has increased tremendously, that he's rededicated himself. Take that for what it is. This is a guy, though, unfortunately, him and Troy Smith, if both Leftwich and Batch are brought back, this kid has probably not going to be around training camp very long, if at all. So, I just want to throw that buzz out there. Somebody asked me about that on Twitter about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, and I followed up on it, read the nice little story on him. So take that for what it is as far as Jared Johnson goes.
Yeah, he's an athlete, and I guess as a quarterback, that's kind of that's one of those labels that maybe means you're not a great quarterback. But we'll see. I'll be interested to see if he gets to camp and if he has an opportunity to be on the practice squad. Probably not the kind of roster spot the Steelers would want to use. But, he'll be an interesting guy to watch. It's certainly during the OTAs and what's going on with that, to see where things go. Dave, as we talked about at the top, the draft is now front and center. it is the topic of conversation, as there are some, you know, just limited free agent moves being made around the league. Bounty Gate's going to get wrapped up again this week. The appeals decision, the Bill Parcells stuff. But there's not much else going on in the league. And I guess one of the things about the draft now is, as time has gone on, this has become a huge event unto itself. It's the biggest thing that goes on, not on the field during the NFL season. And we've got guys coming, but there is tape out on a lot of guys, but there are just so many guys to look at. There's so many guys to talk about, and there's so much information coming at people. What are your latest thoughts on some of the guys we talked about? And let me open up with Dontari Poe, because he's the guy we talked a lot about in the last podcast. Just what you said now seems to be gaining some more consensus. He was fabulous at the combine. The guy was not particularly productive at Memphis during his time there. The film doesn't show that he was a dominating player, but people had him going as high as 8 or 9 now in some mock drafts. But maybe people are starting to just relax a little bit and taking their foot off the throttle, and maybe there's a little bit of a cooling on Dontari Poe.
Yeah, you know, I'm not one to pat myself on the back, David. No. Mike Mayock came out, and there's a good piece up on his blog. And I kind of found I have a lot of respect for Mike Mayock, but I don't think he watched a lot of film initially with Poe. And it's easy to look at his measurables and get excited about him at first. I was excited about Poe at first, until I went in and dug around about 3 games worth of tape, and as I mentioned on the previous podcast there, he just did not flash against the lower competition. He is not a guy that has a lot of experience lining up over the nose, playing 2-gap type control that you would need out of a 3-4 nose tackle. He mostly made his living as a 1-gap 3-tech guy who could also shift it up and down the line as a 5-tech guy as well. The guy has speed. There's no doubt about that. He is very, very, very raw. He can make plays in the backfield. He can push the pocket at times. That combine strength that you saw during him lifting the 225 40 something times does not transfer over really to the film. And this is pretty much what Mike Mayock has come out and said about this kid as well too. And I think Mayock has dropped him, I think, from his second rated defensive tackle to, I forget if it was the fourth or the fifth that he's dropped him to now. And that's exactly what I saw on film, David. And does this mean that Dontari Poe cannot become a true zero technique, 2-gap, 3-4 nose tackle at the next level? I'm not willing to throw that baby out with that bathwater yet. I think initially, and I think why he might be drafted in the first round by some of these teams is because I think he is better suited as a 4-3 defensive tackle, 3 technique that could come in and contribute in his rookie season in some sort of a rotation type package. So am I ready to drop him entirely out of the first round? No. Am I ready to say that he will not be on the board when the Steelers pick at 24 either? No. I all I can do is look at the tape. As far as that goes, it's hard to project what a guy can be outside of that, what his potential is going forward on that. I'm not convinced that he can be in every, you know, a base nose tackle going forward, though, but I could be wrong on that. But I think his stock is definitely dropping here, and Mike Mayock is a testament to that.
Interesting stuff. I haven't watched as much film as you or Mayock, so I'll leave it to you guys. I'll be surprised if he's there on the board at 24. The guys who I think we're comfortable saying in terms of nose tackles who are going to be gone, I think Fletcher Cox from Mississippi State is a guy who's looked probably go in the top 10, and so he'll be off the board. Then you've got some of the defensive tackles, and Devin Still of Penn State and Brockers from LSU are really and probably worthy of Michigan State are more nose tackle types. And then we get into some of the guys.
I would call them defensive tackle type. I wouldn't call them.
I'm sorry, excuse me. I meant defensive tackle types. And then we get back to some of the guys, Ta'amu from Washington, and then further down the list, Mike Martin of Michigan, who apparently the Steelers like, are more kind of the nose tackle fit. Martin being kind of the shortest of guy of the group, who's really kind of, 6'1", 306, But apparently the Steelers were very impressed with him up at his pro day in Michigan, right? We talked about that?
Yeah, and I wanted to focus on kind of two positions for the draft today, and nose tackle was one of them. And when you look at kind of how the Steelers will probably be stacking their board, you've got Josh Chapman, who, you know, let's face it, Kevin Colbert's been down at everything Alabama-related down there. Now, is he down there to see the linebacker, Dante Hightower, or is he checking in on Josh Chapman, who hasn't really done anything since having that knee repaired? That being said, Josh Chapman, you know, I think kind of relate to what happened with Casey Hampton. I believe Casey Hampton was coming off a similar type knee surgery when he came out of Texas as well. Chapman, to me right now, I think would be the truest outside of Poe of a true nose tackle who might be available late in the third round. Then you have Tamahu. I have trouble with that damn name every damn time. Alameda Tamu out of Washington, and I'm just not seeing the Steelers' interest there with him thus far. Not saying that there's not, but then you say Mike Martin, after that, and I did go back last night and watch more of Mike Martin on tape at Michigan for this podcast today. I had done some initial study on him. I wanted to watch the bowl game again against, Virginia Tech there. And this is a guy that can play, zero technique and three technique. He can line up over the center. He does handle the double team well. He is extremely quick, busting through some seams. He does get his back turned at times, but he's always around the football. He's a chase guy too. Although at 300 something pounds, he is. He's not going to blaze up a 40 or anything like that, but he does move well. There was one play where I saw him actually drop into coverage and smack the wide receiver coming, within the distance allowed as he's coming across. He is a guy that's very smart. I think the Steelers do have interest with him. He said in one of these interviews that you can find on SteelersDepot.com that he really felt the Steelers had interest in him at the draft. He was one of their 60, not at the draft, at the combine. He's one of the 60 players that the Steelers met with. I would not be surprised to see him brought in for a pre-draft visit here anytime now. I think the interest is real there, David. I think outside, when you get past Poe, Chapman, and Alameda from Washington, I think Mike Martin is a for real prospect in round three or round four as a potential nose tackle type prospect. I think he can play the five technique, in some of that rotation that the Steelers like to use as well, too. I think he can help at some point during his rookie season, and he looks good on film.
Yep, I've heard much similar talk. We talk about these guys. Look, one of the things that happens, and I think we're probably past it with Luck and RG3, because these guys have graded out. I'll just go back to your comment on Luck earlier, is I think Luck will be the starting quarterback on opening day. We've seen kind of the change in thinking over the years. Now, a guy doesn't sit the first two or three years to get the experience because of the nature of the business and the dollars involved and all of that. But also, he's an incredibly bright guy, and both he and RG3 are going to be the starting quarterback on day one for their respective teams. No doubt about that in my mind. But the other thing is, as we were saying, there's so much analysis of guys that I just think, people's opinions change without new information, just because they look at so much and you're trying to dissect these guys and figure everything out and then figure if, what their heart's like, what their head's like. We'll see over the next 17 days, guys will move around. Now, if it's guys moving guys around because it's the first time they get to watch them on film, like Mayock, that's one thing. But you'll see less of that from the Kuipers and the McShays. And, I think fans want things to change and they want new information and things like that. But those guys spend their job is not to provide color on NFL games. Their job is to follow college players all year round. And so they've now seen these guys a bunch of times, and there's not going to be a ton of new information for them.
Yeah, I agree. And here's the thing with all, with the age of the internet now, we have all these profile sites, and I like National Football Post. I think Wes does a great job there, and his breakdowns, they match a lot of what I see on film. I like reading Mike Mayock stuff as well, too. But you're going to get, we live in a day and age where everybody is an NFL draft scout now, but a lot of what you see is regurgitated stuff in a lot of what you read. And I advise everybody, if you have time, in fact, one of the questions we got through the Terrible Podcast account, and I'm having a hard time finding the exact email right now, but he asked me how I go about finding tape on all these guys. And it's quite simple with ESPN3 through my cable provider and all, I have access to ESPN3 online. You can go back through those games. You could do a search on almost any game that you want that's up there in their archives, and there's quite a few from almost every school out there. The University of Memphis, for example, there were three of them in there. Go in there and watch three or four or five series of the guy in question and see if the guy, you don't have to be an NFL scout to know whether or not a guy is showing up making some splash plays, if he's able to play over the nose, say, for example, with these defensive tackles. Little things like the guard play with Brandon Brooks, the kid out of Miami, Ohio. There's good film out on there on him as well. He's a guy that looks to play right guard position. He played left guard in the East-West Shrine game. When in doubt, don't take my opinion, don't take anybody else's opinion, but go and watch these kids, because you'll see a lot of differences from a lot of these sites overnight, scouts on the internet that really have no idea, most of them I've noticed have not watched a lick of tape. So go back and watch the tape yourself on these guys and make your own judgment.
Yep, that's exactly the right answer, Dave. You said you wanted to focus on nose tackle a bit. We've done a little of that. What was the other position you were looking to talk about?
Yeah, running back, and we haven't really let's catch up everybody on these pre-draft visits that have taken place. The guy's not from the University of Pittsburgh. Of course, those guys are considered local visits. The T.Y. Hilton kid, the wide receiver out of Florida International, we talked about. Derek Wolf, a guy I really like as a 3-4 technique guy out of Cincinnati's visited. Brandon Brooks has been brought in for a visit since we last talked. Keith Tandy, a nice cornerback, sort of undersized out of West Virginia, was brought in this past week, as was Jarrell Harris out of Alabama. He's the kid that played outside linebacker opposite, drawing the blank of the other kid, outside linebacker, first round talent for Alabama. Help me out with his name real quick, David.
You got me. You got Kirkpatrick.
Courtney Upshaw. Upshaw, right. Yeah, I had him on the tip of my damn tongue. But he's a guy that's projected probably to go sixth or seventh round or undrafted in the draft here. So they brought him in. Now the guy today, Isaiah Pete, that's why I wanted to focus on the running backs today. Isaiah Pete, of course, is the shifty running back out of Cincinnati. He's the kid that really blew up at the Senior Bowl.
Yep.
Kind of a third down. To me, when I go back and look at film, Adam, he's not a between-the-tackles type runner. He is a guy that can help you on third down. He is not afraid to run between the tackles. Could stand to have a little bit of, add a little bit of bulk as far as that concern goes. But he really does work well out of the backfield, and I think that's how the Steelers see him. Not only that, but he's not afraid to stick his nose in there and pick up the blitz as well. So this is a guy the Steelers have had interest in dating back to the combine. He was one of their one of their combine interviews of the 60 they had down there. I think the interest is real there, David. I think the concerns with possibly Mawaldi Moore, gone via free agency, they may or may not bring Mawaldi Moore back as a camp body for the minimum. We'll have to see how that plays out. Of course, Baron Batch is coming off of the ACL injury, so there are some question marks around him, although he looks good in his rehab that we mentioned last podcast as well, too. Pete, I think that interest is real, David. I think he's a fourth or a fifth round guy. I think he drops a little further than most think, because I do not see him as a solid three down running back. I see him more of a change of pace guy who can come in for a series or two on first and second down to help you out, especially late in ball games if you're behind or running a two-minute offense. So I think that interests as well. Now, we had some people ask on Twitter about Robert Turbin.
Let me just throw a couple thoughts on Pete. he's the punt returns down at the Senior Bowl were the big that you know that really caught people's attention. And I think we can say if the Steelers go with Pede, Barry Batts is going to have a lot of trouble making the team. It's highly unlikely in my thinking that both those guys would be carried on the roster.
Yeah, you could be exactly right. You got Mendenhall going to start on PUP. Redmond's going to be your opening day back for sure. Question marks, do you carry four running backs? Do you have, being that Mendenhall starts on PUP, you could have Redmond, you could have either Dwyer or John Clay, more probably. You know, that would be a wide open competition in camp there to see who backs up Redmond as kind of a first and second down back. And then could you realistically have both Batch and, let's say, Isaiah P? Could you carry four running backs, with Mendenhall on PUP there, David?
No, I just they're not. That's why I'll be surprised. I mean, I like Pete for all the reasons people do. I know Jim Wechsel said, he's the guy the Steelers are going to take in the third round. I don't see it. I'm going to point you to an article that came up today on Pro Football Talk. Adrian Peterson, he tore his ACL on Christmas Eve, and he had his first workout today for the Vikings, for their staff, Leslie Frazier, their coach, the trainers. Eric Sugarman's the trainer. Really impressed with his movement, the things he was able to do. He's on schedule. He's doing well. He's right where things were laid out for him after his surgery. Mendenhall's injury took place a week later. His surgery took place 2 weeks later. Adrian Peterson is a bull of a guy. He's in fantastic shape. But again, Mendenhall's a professional athlete. He's going to be working at this. It's an important year for him with his contract situation up in the air. They're expecting, if things continue at this level, for Adrian Peterson to be there playing, being the starting back for the Vikings on opening day. So I just want to go back to this whole idea that somehow came about a couple weeks ago that, Rashard Mendenhall is not going to ever play for the Steelers again. He's had his last carry. Look, Kevin Colbert's being cautious. His job is to make sure the Steelers aren't caught shorthanded if rehab weren't to go well or if the guy doesn't go on schedule. And that's his job, and I think sometimes he talks about things and then the media misinterprets it, and I think this has been wildly misinterpreted. I think the expectation is, sure, Mendenhall starts the season on PUP, but if we're talking about Adrian Peterson starting the season as the opening day running back for the Minnesota Vikings, the timeline is 1 month later. We've talked about Barron Batts being full go already. His timeline was 3 or 4 months earlier. I just don't want to rule Rashard Mendenhall out of this conversation. And if he's definitely looks like during camp that he's going to be functional, even if they put him on PUP, then they're definitely not carrying, four backs on a everyday roster.
Yeah, but if you do put Mendenhall on PUP, it does not count against a 53-man roster.
Right, but okay. I think
from that point, would you carry four running backs until he got – I mean, we've been through all the whether or not we think Mendenhall is going to play. Okay, and I think he can play at some point. I think he will at least be on PUP for 6 weeks, if not a couple weeks past that. Now, with that, now if he is on PUP, would you carry four backs on a 53-man roster until he returns?
Here's my question: when you keep saying a couple weeks past that, if we're talking about a guy, professional back, we've got info here on Adrian Peterson. He's expecting to be the opening day starter. Why would you think that Mendenhall would be much longer than that?
I just don't think that he's going to be ready by week one of the season, David. I think he starts camp on the active PUP, and I think there's no reason to rush him whatsoever. That's why. I think the Steelers can get by without rushing him for at least the first 6 weeks of the season. And that's what it would cost him by being on PUP. I just don't see him being there. I don't care what Adrian Peterson and the Vikings are doing. As far as that goes, that could be just smoke and mirrors that they're blowing up over there as well, too, with the Vikings. So
he actually had a workout in front of, 10 guys.
Workouts and taking the hit and running in the NFL game, especially, don't they play on carpet?
They do in that dome.
To me, that's even much harder on those knees. Why, if you're the Vikings, would you even risk that?
Because he's a running back. It's the NFL. He's one of the best players in the game. If he's ready to go, you you know, you run him till he can't go anymore, and then you find the next guy. We're not keeping Rashard Mendenhall around for 2014. If he can go, go. If he can't, don't.
I don't think he's going to be able to go, and I'll buy you a cold drink if Adrian Peterson's on the week does not start the season on PUP either. I mean, I play a Twitter docker, and I did not stay at the Holiday Inn Express last night, but man, I mean, all I'll say is this: if Adrian Peterson does start week one, oh, the joys of modern medicine, okay? And it really would be surprising in my eyes. And the same thing with Rashard Mendenhall. But I think we're going way off on a tangent here. We made our feelings known about Mendenhall. But let me go back to the most likely scenario, in my opinion, which is him starting on PUP. If that's the case, would you or would you not carry four other additional backs on the 53-man roster?
I think, it's whether they're all active for game day is a different question. But sure, four backs, yeah, I don't have any problem with it. I mean, if those four backs are, Batch, Redmond, and Clay, and Jonathan Dwyer, yeah, that's fine. It's just if and when Mendenhall were to make it back, then I don't know. You probably put you can put Batch maybe on the practice squad or put Clay on the practice squad. But sure, I don't have any problem with the guys who are in the organization right now.
All right, let's go the other scenario with you. Mendenhall's ready by week one. Okay, do you carry four running backs on the 53-man roster if Mendenhall's ready?
Yes. I think you carry four running backs no matter what. Now, it'd be good if one of those guys were able to do more. I think it's somewhat of a requirement that one of them is going to have to be able to play some special teams or give you something in the return game. At that point, I do think your question is who's better on special teams. I don't see, as we've talked about, you said it just right. I think John Clay and Jonathan Dwyer are seen as somewhat the same type of guy. And if Redmond's healthy, and Mendenhall is able to make it back at whatever point of the season that is, I don't see both of those guys on the roster either. So it's kind of like the Pede Batch thing. Those two guys are competing for a similar spot, and I think Clay and Dwyer would be competing for a similar spot, with the obvious advantage for Clay is that he can go to the practice squad again this year.
Yeah, Clay can go back to the practice squad. One thing about Pede, though, if you're drafting Pede in the fourth round, okay, he's going to be on your 53-man roster.
Sure. If taking with the fourth round pick, he'll have to lose that spot.
Right. Now, if he gets down in the fifth round there, well, then there's that. Really, you could see him battle Baron Batch, and Batch is eligible for the practice squad as well too. And you very well could see that happen. So I'm with you. I think in some shape, form, or fashion, whether Mendenhall's in there or not, I think you see four running backs on the 53-man roster, and that's something they have not done recently because they've normally carried three on the 53-man roster to start the season. So now that we got that out of the way, and anybody listening, send us your thoughts on that as well to theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Now let's go forward from Isaiah P. Some people have asked about Robert Turbin out of Utah State, 5'10", roughly 220, 222 pounds. This is a guy that worked kind of out of a spread offense, kind of lines up, in the power type eye. He has, he's shown some good things on tape. He's more of a thickly built player. To me, just did not show up on tape as running with a lot of power despite that size. He's not afraid to make contact at the second level. When you get into his route running, he's just an average. He does not have great hands, in my opinion. I have not seen an elite, willingness to get in there and pass block. He will attempt it. He's just not good at it. So I think that's what kind of separates him from Pede. I would really be surprised if this guy, if the Steelers went that direction. I think the Steelers want more of an all-purpose third down back, and I think the same can be said. I think there was another guy that people were asking about in addition to Turbin. Let me see if I can find his name here.
We've got the guy. I've seen, both Doug Martin, the running back from Boise State, talked about a little bit in connection with the Steelers, and there's David Wilson, the running back from Virginia Tech.
Yeah, in fact, Martin, I think, was one that somebody asked about. 5'9 and a quarter, 223. he's got some good bursts and some good top end. Basically, he's an elusive type guy. I just, once again, I'm not convinced that he does not show up good in pass block. I know that. That was in my notes on him. So, when you look at running backs, it's such a fungible position, as you kind of alluded to and we've talked about several times. Unless a guy is someone like a Trent Richardson, an every down type back, it's hard to see going after spending an early round draft pick on some of these guys. That's why you've seen the Steelers kind of go these previous years after the Barron Batch late rounds. He's not an every down back. The Jonathan Dwyer, a lot of question marks with him. They got him in the sixth round. John Clay, of course, undrafted. Unless you have an elite back, I just cannot see the Steelers spending a draft pick on fourth round or higher, and sorry to all those people, the LaMichael James guy, fans and all like that. I'm just not seeing them being a fit because the running back position is so fungible, sort of as you alluded to with Peterson. You run them to the wheels come off, you throw them out in the trash, and you go get you another one. And
Dave, on that front, again, talking about this stuff is part of the reason I don't see – like you said, I don't see them taking Pete maybe in the third round, and we'll see what happens. But I do want to talk about a little bit about LaMichael James, because it goes back to this point that we've talked about. And I don't, Danny Woodhead is obviously the extreme, and we're talking about it with Dontari Poe. Is the answer is when you have productivity, when you see productivity at the collegiate level, you obviously have to take into consideration the competition. But I think there's something to be said for that. And LaMichael James is a guy that I'm not sure guys have rated high enough. I'd like to see his speed numbers again. I was just looking quickly at the last thing I saw. Had him running a 4.45, doing some of the shuttle numbers very well, as you would expect, in the three cone drills. He's listed at 5'8", 194, so he's small. But I just feel like that level of productivity, I expect to see him be a productive NFL back. Now, again, I agree with what you said. I'm not taking him in the first three rounds. If he's there in the fifth round, he's the kind of guy I think you want to jump on.
Yeah, I think he goes about the third or fourth ranked back in this draft class, so that's going to put him probably, what, third round?
Yeah, although I have seen some people rate him as low as, eight or nine, actually even behind Pete on some people's boards.
I would expect him to be off the board probably into the third. That's why Pete, I don't think you have to be in a hurry to draft Pete, because I think there's still a lot of question marks of him being an every down back. So those type guys, are you really going to take a guy in the third round that's not an every down back? And to me, that answer is no. I think Pete is more of a change of pace back, sort of like Mawaldi Moore was. I think he's kind of a young version, more explosive guy like that. Plus, he gives you the ability to punt return that you mentioned, which makes him, in my opinion, more of a late fourth round. Even though some people won't disagree, maybe he's the type of kid that slides to the fifth as well too. So the guy did have a lot of buzz around him, at the Senior Bowl and all. But I'm with you with guys like LaMichael James and some of those other guys like the Boise State kid. Those guys are going to go to teams that are looking for a potential every down back, and those guys usually come off the board late second, late third, right around in there, just because of the type game that we play now in the NFL is more of it's a pass first league, and the running backs are so replaceable, in my opinion. So yeah, I'm with you. I think James has the ability to be an NFL talent. I think you get a hell of a bargain on him in the third round.
Dave, it'll be interesting stuff, and we'll see where he goes. A guy, this is going to be breaking to you, I think.
I just heard it. I know what you're going to say.
All right, well, we got
Dave, David Hawthorne?
Yeah, we got some breaking news here.
Yeah, that's a shame.
As a guy that Dave talked about extensively last week, if you heard the podcast, as we spent a lot of time talking about the inside linebacker position for the Steelers. Ferrier's obviously gone. Foot is not necessarily guaranteed to be with the club in week one, but it looks like he is the most likely opening day starter at today's point in time. And Dave talked about the linebacker from Seattle, David Hawthorne, and it's just come across that he has agreed to a 5-year deal with the New Orleans Saints.
And what to me, you know, I kind of wonder if this guy had a gun charge or murdered somebody. Why the hell he was hanging around this long? It could have been about the money. But as I wrote about a week and a half ago, I guess, about on Hawthorne, this guy would have made a great buck linebacker if the money was right, if you could get him at a first-year cap number. I think, refresh my memory, the Saints already had signed another inside linebacker since free agency started as well, too. I know the Saints had Hawthorne in for a pre-draft visit. For a free agency visit at beginning portions of free agency. They did not sign him. It'd be interesting to see that the money that Hawthorne got. But to me, that's a great, great signing by the Saints. I think this is a guy that you'll hear about for the next 5 years. I think he'll play his contract out there in New Orleans. I think that's a great signing by them.
Yeah, that is a good signing. And you know, always nice to see good players sign in the other conference. We're not going to see him anytime soon. But, yeah, that's interesting. You talked about him at length in the last show. But, okay, Dave, is there anything we want to get to before we wrap things up today?
Yeah, I think we hit on the running backs, and I apologize. Quite a few of you had mentioned on when I put the call out on players that you wanted to talk about on Twitter. I want to try to do these by groups, and that's why today we went by nose tackle. Several of you had mentioned the same guys, the same with the running backs there as well, too. I think David and I both agree as far as running backs go. It's going to be sort of a change of pace back, like Pede. I think that's why you're seeing the interest in him and not more of a the guy from Boise State or Turbin or anything like that as well, too. So going forward, we're going to try to break these down by position, some guys that Steelers might have stacked on their draft board going forward. As always, I have the pre-draft visits listed on SteelersDepot.com for you to keep, kind of abreast of the situation as well. So, David, without further ado, what else can we talk about to close it out?
I think that's about it. I see, we see these names. There's still a couple good players left out there. You talked about the tackle from the Bills coming to visit the Steelers last week, at the end of last week. I think his next trip was on to the Eagles. So, we'll see who the Steelers bring in, both in free agency and in the draft. But, again, I know it sometimes is frustrating for fans to see other teams sign these guys' names. But, if you're listening to this podcast, the Steelers, how they operate. They look to sign their own. They're a stable franchise. You're not going to see anything till April 20th. Hopefully,
let me throw some quick name rule out at you. And we've already talked to him a little bit. Plaxico Burress. If Jericho Cotchery goes signs with the Rams, do you sign Plaxico Burress? Being that price tag's had to drop down considerably right now.
I just think he was so unproductive the second half of the year that I don't think he's a good enough football player. X anything else that might be part of the conversation. I was wrong and surprised last year that the Steelers considered it as seriously as they did when they brought him into camp. But that ship sailed then. That was last year, right? That ship sailed then, and I can't see it now, just because I don't think he's a good enough football player.
You don't think he's a guy you can bring in on third down? Give him 300, 400 snaps?
I think he's a guy, he'd be nice in the red zone and stuff like that. I mean, certainly you could, but I'd like to think the way the Steelers are going, that if they weren't able to, if they're not able to get Cotchery, there's a hole there. You and I have both made the assumption that Wallace is back. It's not a gaping hole, but it's a hole, and they're going to have to find somebody. So, I wouldn't rule it out. I'll be surprised, and I'd say no, but obviously I've been wrong plenty of times before.
And let's face it, even if it is Cotchery or Plaxico, I mean, Plaxico did have 45 catches, 612 yards, and 8 touchdowns last year, kind of in some, in some limited action. I thought there's always the worries about his back tightening up on him. I think he's learned his lessons about the other stuff. He still stays in close contact with Ben as well, too. I bet Ben's lobbying hard to get him back there. You also have the injury concerns still, as Mike Tomlin talked about with Emmanuel Sanders and that foot, but if this is a guy you could get on a, 1 year, he's not going to give you anything on special teams, but neither is Jericho Cotchery either. So, if this is a guy you could bring in on a qualifying 1 year contract, to me, it's either him or Cotchery.
Well, it'd be interesting to see. And obviously, the Steelers are going to have a lot more information by the time of draft day. And we've talked about where they go with needs. And maybe we'll spend some more time on wide receiver on the next one, but If one of those guys is gone, all of a sudden receiver moves up that list to kind of third or fourth round, that certainly becomes an area where the Steelers may look to go receiver.
Absolutely. And we'll put on the books that we'll talk about the wide receiver position and probably, I don't know, maybe offensive guard in the next podcast.
And yeah, David, when we do that offensive guard thing, we talked about this. We want to remember to we'll talk about what linemen do at pro days. We talked about, you know, I think people are pretty comfortable with what the skill position guys are doing on their pro day and stuff like that. We'll talk about how people look to evaluate linemen aside from just looking at film.
Absolutely. And we appreciate all the great comments on Twitter. You can follow David at Hammer Speaks. Follow me at Steelers Depot. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. We did not call out people, shout out by names. I do not have that info in front of me, but a lot of them were along the same line questions. We'll try to give, you know, more shout outs going forward here, but keep the questions coming via email and Twitter. We certainly do appreciate the feedback and the questions.
Great stuff. And thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.